KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I'm Mike Koenig. My compatriot on engineering is Egberto Willis, who has his own show Thursdays, Politics Done Right. But this Thursday, I'm going to be sitting in for him, so you're going to get a double dose of me, like it or not. Okay, call me at 713-526-5738. That's kind of where that idea for that intro song came from. It's like, call me. Open forum tonight. I'll have some things that I'll throw out that are kind of on my mind, but those are not mandatory topics. And we do have open lines, 713-526-5738. Okay, some things I've been thinking about. Greek austerity. Certainly the Greeks are adults. The government should be adults. They should have been able to manage their money. That's kind of the Eurobank attitude and the banker's attitude. Hey, you know, you borrowed the money. You're responsible for it. And there was another headline today that, of course, the poor and the disabled are taking the biggest hits with the Greek austerity measures. The last so-called bailout of Greece apparently now has left them with a 25% unemployment rate, which is what the United States had during the Great Depression. So they are going through the equivalent of a Great Depression. So what is the answer? You know, responsible banks. We've talked about responsible governance. Responsible governance should be you understand when you're getting in over your head in debt. Responsible banking should be when they tell you the hard truth and they say, we're not going to loan you additional money because you're getting in your head, you're getting over your head in debt. So, you know, we've had disreputable mortgage companies, some of them big recognizable banks, some of them contractors. And we know that bankers sometimes they really want to improve the balance sheet. They don't so much worry about whether repayment is an option. They figure they can always pull the short hairs. That's the polite way of putting it. Should the bankers be taking a haircut? The Germans, who in their history over 100 years have had a lot of debt forgiven. And I respect Germany. I truly do. I think post-war Germany is a remarkable example of what a country can change from and into. But there are a lot of people that feel the Germans are being unreasonably harsh in the terms they're applying to Greece. But anyhow, so there's that. Another thing, why does air travel suck so much from departure to arrival? Why does it suck in the airport? Why does it suck on the airplane? Why does it suck in baggage? And why does it suck when you're trying to pick up your friends and loved ones at the other end of the airport? It's horrible. Horrible! I cannot speak enough. And think about this. It is recognized that Americans are getting bigger. And because of that, garment manufacturers have resized their garments. Shoe manufacturers have resized their shoes. Even furniture manufacturers have resized their furniture. Architects have resized their doors. So with all of that stuff, recognizing Americans are getting bigger and enlarging their merchandise, isn't it interesting that airline seats are getting smaller? It's like we're all turning Japanese. We're all getting tiny, while everything else recognizes we're getting bigger. That is a place where we need some regulation for like a minimum, what they call pitch, which is the distance between seats front to back, and width. We need something that makes a seat at least as wide as our shoulders. So that gives an overweight person like me some hope. Okay, another interesting thing, infrastructure. You know, we all, I think, among our listeners, and when I say we all, so I'm going to presume, we all feel that there should be more spending on infrastructure, especially when times are slow economically. The government should be spending money on infrastructure, so-called priming the pump. So now we got infrastructure. We got all kinds of road construction going on downtown on I-45. We've got road construction going on Shepherd. I think it's like between Allen Parkway and like San Felipe or thereabouts. But the thing that's troubling me, it seems like the construction is on main north-south corridors. So I don't know. It seems like it would have been nice if they'd left some of the alternate routes that are useful. And then the last thing, and then I'll take phone calls, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. I never thought I would do this on the show, but I'm going to mention a Kardashian. Well, technically a Jenner. Kylie Jenner has done her hair in cornrows. And apparently there are some in the black community that have gotten very, very upset with her about her hair being in cornrows. Some of them are mad at her for co-opting a black style by a white girl. Some of them are mad at her because she's co-opting a black style, but she's not working to help the black community. And I never knew that using weaves and hairstyles, I mean, you have black people straightening their hair. You have other people curling their hair. You've got people with ponytails, people with cornrows. I never understood that this became a racial statement. Now, you realize the United States has taken great pride in its cultural imperialism all over the world. We want people to copy our culture, for better or worse. You would think that black people would be happy and flattered that their culture is making inroads into the majority society. You know, in the period of Riverdance, when suddenly Irish music was a big thing, the Irish didn't get upset when other people copied Irish music. They said, now it's the Irish moment. Our culture is finally getting out there. So I don't understand the resentment. It just really, really puzzles me. 713-526-5738. Egberto, did you want to have a comment before I took Barry?
Yeah, I don't think we need to give that credibility.
Give what credibility?
I mean, that story is not a real story.
It is real.
I mean, I'm not on you, buddy. What I'm saying is, I think that whole thing was orchestrated to start, you know, to get these guys in. Because, first of all, white girls have been wearing cornrow forever.
Yeah, I mean, going back to Bo Derek.
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah, so I mean, this new thing about appropriation, about that, everything black has been appropriated and vice versa. I mean, I think.
But isn't it interesting that there are people that get bent out of shape about that?
I think it's rather silly.
It is silly, but interesting.
Yes, it's interesting, but it's silly. There's a lot of things that we need to work on. Employment for white. I don't care if somebody wants to appropriate something. You know what? Let me tell you what would be very difficult.
Okay, and then we'll take Barry, and then you can pick up the other call.
This is going to be, oh, I'll do that.
Okay. Then in that case, give me Barry. Barry, you're on the air. Thank you for waiting. How you doing tonight?
Barry to the rescue to make this show live and formidable and a robust spirited give and take.
I love
nice
that.
Topic. We are taxing the liberal mind. A Zimbabwe journalist lamented recently, quote, we have lost the ability and the desire to create wealth. And for this, our nation suffers.
How do you figure?
Question about, well, without wealth,
No, I mean, how do you figure that we've sort of made this decision that we're no longer retired?
No. This was a Zimbabwe journalist in the country of Zimbabwe, former Rhodesia.
Okay.
He said, quote, we have lost the ability and the desire to create wealth, and for this our country suffers. But my question is about taxes tonight.
Okay.
One, would you be in favor of lower taxes across the board, every tax bracket?
No.
Wouldn't, okay. Would you be in favor of tax incentives that create wealth?
If they actually did, sure, but I have my doubts.
95% of small businesses failed each year. But it's been said that they got a tax holiday the first year, allowed them to succeed. Would you be in favor of a tax holiday the first year for all small businesses across the
board? Well, I mean, I'm gonna give you a qualified yes on that. The problem is that the definition of small business, for the purposes of taxation, has changed so much over the last 30 years. A small business used to be like employing under 50 people. And from a financial standpoint, a small business was anything under $20 million a year gross revenue. And now you have very, very rich people who get into these limited partnerships. And the limited partnership is seen as a small business, but the small business is owned by billionaires and multimillionaires. And that's a distortion of the intent of the tax incentive.
Well, you have a qualified yes on that, right?
A qualified yes, highly qualified.
Okay. Well, tax break for repatriated profits offshore. For example, Apple Computers has $100 billion over in Ireland.
I do not favor that. And the reason...
Let me the whole thing first,
All right.
They paid 19%, which is the Irish tax, on this money already. They're saying it would make little sense to bring this money back here and pay a 39% more.
Okay, hold on. A clarifying question. You're saying they paid 19% on the overseas money already?
Already.
To whom?
They have some money in Ireland, but other places too. But let's use Ireland, for example.
Okay.
Top tax rate is 19%.
Okay, wrap it up quickly because we need to get other people, and I have a couple of questions.
They're saying they're not bringing this money back here without a tax break. I'm saying it would be better to have the money back here in America rather than let them keep it. Let them keep it in Ireland.
Let me tell you a story, and then I'll give you a more firm answer.
I have two more questions. I'm hoping not long.
Okay, pose them quickly.
All right. We've got DuPonts. This is one of the real involved the inheritance tax. And before you do a knee-jerk emotion, listen, okay? They earn $100 million a year for 10 years. That's $1 billion. That $1 billion, they paid $350 million in taxes. That leaves $650 million. And DuPont come in and say, you know what, we're going to leave John DuPont the fifth an inheritance of $650 million. The government comes in and says, wait a minute, now we're going to take half of that. Now, it's easy to take pot shots when it involves the DuPonts or the Rockefellers, but a lot of small businesses and family farms are also lost due to this, the horrors of the inheritance.
Okay, I'm going to stop you there. I don't know if you have more to say, and I'm going to try to touch on the points you've made. First of all, as far as the repatriation of profits overseas, about 40 years ago, 1974-ish, there was a major, major slump in the auto industry. They had like 90 days of inventory when a maximum of 30 is considered healthy. And for the first time, maybe ever in the history of the automotive industry, they thought of putting the cars on sale, literally having a sale. And all the local government said, no, you can't do that. If you cut the price of cars, then our sales tax revenue goes down, and in a time of recession, we'll get murdered. We already have reduced tax revenues. So the car companies came up with the idea of how about rebates? And the states were fine with that because you get taxed on the full price, and then the rebate comes back after the tax. Now, what happened as a result of that is now people wait for the rebates. They know that there's going to be a rebate eventually, and they wait until a manufacturer starts to offer rebates on a certain model. And now, instead of just a flat, unhindered stream of buying at various times of year, now you get surges when they do rebates because of the expectation. When you talk about repatriating profits, we already had a tax holiday, I think, during the Bush administration. We had a tax holiday on repatriated profits. And they repatriated some of those profits, and now they're holding them overseas waiting for the next one.
or is that yes or no?
Well, what I'm saying is I think that if a U.S. company has money over makes money overseas, you know, generally money is taxed in the places where it's earned. Mm-hmm. If they paid tax on that money overseas, then I would say we should not tax them twice, or at least we shouldn't.
Yes.
Hold on. But if they paid 3% in Ireland and we charge 19%, I think we should tax them the difference.
The difference. Okay. So on this one, we'll give you a C minus. You're getting there. You got a long way to go. But as a last of the thinking liberals, you are on your way, because we've got to create more wealth. As Ayn Rand would say, you have sacrificed wealth to these.
Well, Ayn Rand was rather a sociopath, and her books were written...
Ayn Rand was a cosmic mind.
No, she was a sociopath who wrote books admiring sociopaths. But that's a different question. We're not going to get into that. We're not going to get into that.
Okay.
And she was on Social Security.
And she took Social Security. But the other thing you were going to say about the inheritance tax. Recently,
yes.
I was given to understand why an inheritance tax makes sense. It isn't just
Do you fully understand the scenario?
$1 billion,
they paid $350 million.
You already made your point. Now I'm going to give you my point, and then we're going to say thank you, and I'm going to go to the next caller.
All right. Go ahead.
If you have someone with $1 billion, that money is not in cash. If they've already paid $300 million in taxes, that's because they were taxed on income as they accrued that money. But a lot of that money is in assets. It's in assets. It's in real estate. It's in bonds. It's in stocks. And if they were to sell these assets, they would be taxed at the very least at the capital gains rate. If you pass on that property to someone else, essentially what happens is when you die, the government is taking the position you've now sold your property and you have to pay the taxes on it.
You've already paid taxes on it.
No, you have not. You've paid taxes on the income. You have not paid taxes on capital gains through investments.
Okay, suppose the money just sits in the bank. It doesn't go to stock.
Nobody keeps $1 billion.
If money sits there, should it be taxed again?
All right, I'll tell you what. I love the conversation, but I have to be fair to other
folks. You are down now to a D, okay?
I'm the most conservative liberal at KPFT. All right, hold on. I just have to give an ID. You're listening to Think Wing Radio at KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, Texas. I'm Mike Koenig. My engineer is Egberto Willis, who has his own show Thursdays at 3 p.m. Politics Done Right, except this Thursday it's me sitting in for him. Egberto, you had a comment, then we'll go to Bobby.
Right, and the reason why I'm speaking a little bit more this time on your show, Mike, is because you're taking my show on, you're doing my show for me on Thursday, so I have to get a little bit of stuff in.
That's so unfair!
So here's the deal, though. And to Barry, and I'm sorry Barry can't answer, but remember this, the billions that these folks have earned or that they've made, they did not earn. They earned it on the backs of others. So their worth is not really the monies that they have. It's an aberration in capitalism that have given them that worth. And as such, we must tax it. And it goes even a bit further than that, in that when they die, the reality is the tax rate should be way over 80, 90%, because, again, otherwise, from a mathematical standpoint, it is not sustainable.
I agree with parts of what you say. Other parts we could have a long discussion on, and maybe one day we will. Okay, next up is Bobby. Thank you, and thank you all for waiting, Bobby particularly, because I think you've been waiting the longest for Barry to get done. How are you doing tonight?
Good, no problem. I just, in your opening remarks, you mentioned that there are many people questioning the comparison between Germany and their past and Greek at this time. I don't really think that's a fair because of all the details, but I'll let you determine that.
Okay.
And the second question is, I mean, please answer how many people you mean by many. And the second question...
Okay, hold on. Many in I don't remember specifically what you're referring to. Many in terms of what? Hello? I think I lost you. Egberto? Did we accidentally disconnect? Okay, if you call back, we'll talk. Could you put Billy on for me, please? I apologize for Barry being... not for Barry. Yeah, hey!
This Billy. Is Billy Cruz.
Yes, sir. How you doing?
I'm from Pasadena, Texas.
Yes, sir. You're on the air.
I used to be a volunteer at about 10 years ago. KPFT, I had a DWI, and I thought it was the easiest way to do public service because I love the blues show, right?
Okay.
Okay, I'd sit in these committees, and it would be something like, we're gonna build a stage in the back. We're doing these things, and all I was the only person there that was a conservative, a Republican, basically.
Okay.
Even though I do have some liberal views. Okay.
Well, that's not unusual.
But whenever I would make a suggestion, I would just get shot down. But guess who? There was a guy named Dwayne who was the station manager at the time.
Yes, still is.
Dwayne was a doer, okay? These other people that sat around, they were not doers. All right, a lot of people that are calling don't exactly have a grip on, I mean, you know, the world economy. I guess I'm not the world's, I mean, I do have a financial degree, et cetera. But one thing that I do not agree with is the fact that your former caller, for instance, he said that the billionaires made their money off of the backs of the working people.
That was unfair.
Possibly J.P. Morgan's, possibly those kind of people. But did Steve Jobs? But did the guy who runs Microsoft? Hell no! They did it in their garage, okay? And there's a whole lot to be said about American entrepreneurship. And once America gets on their feet again, I mean, I don't even know how it's going to happen with $17 trillion or $19 trillion in debt. I mean, I forget what it is per minute, you know, the interest rate that we owe China. But
the interest rate is practically zero.
I want to ask you a question.
Okay.
If you were to make a succinct, very succinct statement on how to turn the economy around here, for instance, I'm sorry to interrupt again, but there is inflation. By God,
you're asking me to give you a succinct answer to a very, very long statement.
Yeah. Okay. I'm listening now.
Okay. As a proportion of our gross domestic product, we have more debt than we would like, but we actually have very low debt compared to other nations in the world. $17 trillion is a scary number until you realize that the gross domestic product is something like $170 trillion. So maybe 10, maybe 15% of our gross domestic product, as opposed to a country like Greece, whose debt is equal to something like 125% of their gross domestic product.
Yes, Greece is 2% of the European economy. And what is it in percentage of the world economy?
Irrelevant to the question we're discussing.
Okay, go ahead.
The next thing is if you want to improve the economy, you must make the tax system more progressive. Over the last 30-odd years, the Republican goal, they used to call it a flat tax. They don't call it a flat tax anymore. They call it tax reform. But tax reform is just a way of reforming it so it's flatter.
There has never been a flat tax. There's always I'm an accountant.
There has never been a flat tax, but the Republicans have wanted one really almost forever. Pretty much ever since there was an income tax, they wanted a flat tax. When you have and Nick Hanauer, I think, has said this best. Nick Hanauer was an early investor in Amazon. He's a multi-billionaire. And he did a TED talk, and I think he said it as well as anybody could possibly say it. He said, for me to recycle the money that I make, he said, I can only buy so many clothes, so many cars, so many houses. There has to be a way to recycle that money through the economy, or it just gets sucked out of the consumer economy. There are a lot of statistics that show pretty persuasively, if not conclusively, that the more progressive taxation is, the more taxes rich people pay, but because there's more money in the consumer economy, they actually end up netting more money even though they're paying more taxes. Rich people, it's counterintuitive, which is why it's so unpopular. But what about
the statement? Okay, there was a popular statement, I guess, about Warren Buffett made, that his secretary paid more of a percentage.
Right.
But they didn't say that. You know, Every Democrat that liberal that I knew thought that he meant dollars.
Okay, well, you know, they're misinformed. There are a lot of conservatives that are horribly, horribly misinformed.
Absolutely.
What he was saying was that because he gets the unearned tax rate, the unearned income tax rate, he's paying like 15%, whereas she's paying like 25 or 30% on her income. That was what he meant.
Yeah, but 15% of what?
Well, I mean, it doesn't matter. She's paying a higher tax rate on a lower income, which means that she's pained more. Yes, Egberto.
Yeah, I wanted to address one thing from my good friend Billy Cruz right here. Billy, you said that I maligned Bill Gates and Steve Jobs because those guys worked out of their garage to do to make the monies that they made. These guys were very great entrepreneurs and good guys and deserve to make a whole lot of money. The one thing that I do want to tell you that they didn't make is that what they did is known as the capitalization of other people's work. What do I mean by that?
And that's fine.
Right. But what I'm saying is do not dare believe that the $80 billion that Bill Gates has anything to do with his worth. It has everything to do with the worth of every American citizen who paid taxes to DARPA. DARPA, who created the internet, they also owe their money to Xerox and all the engineers in Xerox who were publicly educated by
Well,
the
you're
folks.
Getting into something much broader now than Microsoft.
But it's important. It is important.
I'm sorry, sir?
I thought it was speaking of public programs. For instance, I'm over 55 years old, and there's a program here in, I guess it's nationwide, but for sure it's in Houston, called SER, Seniors for Something in Progress or something like that. Okay, so I'm kind of waiting on some other income to come through, so I decided I'd see what it was about. Well, what they did, they put me to work at a nonprofit organization, all right? Well, not knowing that, you know, just because, I mean, I am over 65, everybody else that works in this program with me that I met was basically had hopefully maybe had a GED, and I'm not degrading that at all.
So what
degrading it?
I'm going to ask you to kind of wrap it up because I have to give someone.
I'm
going to
wrap
turn.
It up.
What is the point?
Yeah,
you're
I'll
making?
Wrap it up in one statement. It's that I love your program.
Thank you.
Because for one time, there's somebody that's got a, I guess, more of a middle of the road attitude with regards to the, platform that KPFT is known for. And thank you very, very much. And it's good listening. I'm going to be listening to you. I'm going to be listening to this program a lot now. And I might even go back and volunteer there now.
Or you might contribute 20 or 30 or 40 bucks. That would be okay, too. But I thank you. I do thank you. I appreciate the compliments. And you haven't heard me talk my socialist stuff yet. So but
well,
I run along the spectrum. Thank you so much, Billy. I appreciate your call.
Well, thank you. And good night.
Thank you. Good night. You're listening to Think Wing Radio, and the reason I call it Think Wing is because you can't always predict where I'm going to fall on something. Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I'm Mike Koenig. My engineer and compatriot is Egberto Willis. And next up is Wendell. Wendell, you're on the air. Thanks for being so patient. How are you doing tonight? Wendell, you're on the air.
Wendell.
You may have to turn down the radio. Are you there?
Hello?
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. Oh,
that's all right.
I just wanted to bring up really quick Greece's debt situation.
Uh-huh.
And how you compared their situation to the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
It's somewhat like America's Great Depression. I can see the comparison there. I think they should solve it the same way FDR solved the Great Depression's issue. Which is, you had to solve it from within the country using, you know, the America's economy rather than borrow more money and just plunge further into debt.
They can't. That's the problem that they have being in the euro. The euro leaves a lot of countries in a very funny place because, on the one hand, you see, in the United States, most states require a balanced budget because they can't print money, whereas the European Union states, because they are still sovereign nations, they still budget as if they're sovereign nations. And if they need to borrow money, they borrow money. But the United States, during the Depression, because we had our own currency, if we wanted to print money and borrow from the Treasury, we could do that. We were essentially, the United States had a license to print money in order to pay for social programs. Economists would quibble with the details, but that's essentially the way it worked. Because Greece is part of the euro, they can't just print more euros to try to spend their way out of their recession. And that's why they've been thinking of leaving the European Union, going back to the Greek drachma.
And would that be, that would be the best solution, right? That way they could focus more on their tourist industry and, you know, start getting their economy back and running into a competitive level.
Well, I think that part of the objection, first of all, is that leaving the euro would not leave the debt. They would still end up with the debt hanging over their heads, and the debt is denominated in euros. So having a drachma, even if they hyperinflated like Germany did in the 1920s, wouldn't help them because it's denominated in euros. The other thing is that if they are still dependent on tourism, they need to do what a lot of places in the United States have done, which is diversify their economy. Tourism is great, but it's a very, very cyclical industry, and it's very subject to the whims of travel agents and the news. So what they need to do is, yes, they need to work on their tourism industry and get people to come back, but they also need to diversify their economy.
But what other opportunities do they have? I mean, what is available to Greece to expand their economy?
Well, you know, you look at a country like Israel. Israel is a resource-poor country, and yet they are a technological power in their own right. They're also known for their produce. Israeli produce is very popular in Europe. It's high quality. And they've managed to accomplish that in a primarily arid country by pioneering things like drip irrigation. So, I mean, there are things that can be done, and I'm not saying they're easy, but the euro creates a problem for them now. And I think that because the Germans have had a lot of debt forgiven at various times in their history over the last 100 years, I think a lot of people, including the French, by the way, are feeling that, and especially,
they should reciprocate that in a way?
Yeah, essentially. And also because the banks arguably are guilty of giving Greece loans when they probably should not have given them loans. Apparently there's at least one company. Egbert, do you remember who it was? There's like an investment banker. It's like a branch of an American well-known company. And apparently they hid some of the debt so that Greece would qualify for the loan, kind of like bad mortgage debt. So, I mean, there are a lot of things here that suggest that there should be more forgiveness for Greek debt.
Brilliant. And I have one last question, then I'll let you go.
Okay.
The last question is, do you think the banks that handle these debts with the euro are being slightly predatory, perhaps trying to push Greece back into the euro and into borrowing more cash?
Well, I would remove the word slightly. I think that they were predatory. I mean, I think whenever you give someone more money than you know they can ever pay back, you're being predatory.
Right.
That's, I mean, a reputable bank is supposed to look at you and say to you, honestly, I know you really need this money, but I'm sorry, I cannot lend it to you. Or we're going to make special circumstances where it's going to help you do this, that, or the other infrastructure, which we know will generate income, which will enable you to pay it back. That's what a banker is supposed to do. When a banker simply says, sure, you know, open the vault, how much you need, that's predatory lending. And we had a mortgage bust here because of predatory lending.
Right, with home mortgages.
Exactly. And it's the same thing on a much bigger scale. Yeah, Gbero.
Just a quick comment. I think also it's a bit more than the debt, but Holland kind of held back on Germany. But I think what they're doing is punitive for one thing, and that is that we got a very left-wing government elected in Greece. And one of the intent of Merkel is she really wants that government to collapse, because the populist nature of that government is a danger for all the other European states that are in sort of a tenuous position. Many other countries are looking to see how Greece works out, and they had to make sure that they made it seem, in a punitive fashion, make it seem that Greece simply, if they decided to leave the euro, they were going to pay. So for the
Greece was the example for Italy, right, and Spain
and Portugal.
And Portugal,
right.
Yes. And I think there's some truth to that. I also think, though, that Greece has some responsibility for borrowing. I mean, adults are running the government, and they borrowed the money. That's number one. I think that they have, you know, tax evasion in some parts of Europe are like national sports. So they have a value-added tax, which means it's essentially a consumption tax. And most countries with value-added taxes have them, A, so the tax is hidden, and B, so that people who are otherwise evading taxes, at least they pay taxes on the stuff they buy. The problem is that if you're a billionaire like, say, Nick Hanauer or Bill Gates or Steve Jobs, you can't possibly spend all the money you're making. So a VAT tax only goes so far. If you don't pay an income tax and you're evading the income tax, so that's a problem on the Greek government, that they don't have a system that is more effectively collecting taxes that are due. So, I mean, there's a lot of blame to go around. It's not all on Greece. It's not all on the bankers. That's how I see it.
Right, and the difficult decision is on Greece.
I think that the difficult decisions are on both sides, and I really do think that Germany and the bankers are wanting to make an example of Greece. I think that otherwise, if they were a regular consumer in this kind of a position, they would write off debts. They would write off a lot of the interest. I mean, I know people, because I see credit reports, and I know that sometimes if you ask for forgiveness on a debt, they'll like write down 2/3 of it, and they'll take the original principal. They'll write off interest. They'll write off penalties.
I don't know if you said this, Mike, but this is important. The first bailout that Greece got was, in effect, a bailout for private banks. So what Germany and Germany and the ECB, the Troika, what they did was they made the private bankers whole. The guys who actually gave the bad loans, they used public money to pay these guys for those loans, and now Greece is in hock with the governments, the taxpayers of the EU. So it's interesting how they did that.
I'll also tell you something else that I think a lot of Americans are not cognizant of, and it's something that I think everybody in the Western world should be watching very carefully. If you remember the Cyprus financial crisis, what they ended up doing was essentially taking like 15% of everybody's savings. So if you had money in the bank, because you were a good citizen and trying to be responsible, because your money was now in essentially government accessible hands, they took 15% of the money in your bank account in order to pay bankers. So I think when you look at Greece, a lot of the Greeks are fearful. I think that the Cyprus precedent is horrible. And I think it should make everybody in the world who uses a bank fearful unless their governments make very, very specific structural reforms or let you know that they have structures in place that absolutely prevents that from happening. Because that will drive people to start putting money back under their mattresses and burying them beside trees and stuff like that. That was a horrible precedent.
Right, which is terrible for the economy and doesn't allow for any growth or stability.
Exactly. So what the creditors are doing is Greece is already in the equivalent of the Great Depression, and the bankers want to suck even more money out of Greece. So it's almost like Herbert Hoover's economic plan on steroids. That's how I kind of see it. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of blame to go around, but at the end of the day, Greece has to grow enough to pay its debt, and everything they're doing is shrinking Greece's economy, making it harder and harder to pay debt.
And so at what point and what decision does Greece have to make to get out of that situation?
They either have to get out of the euro and go to the drachma, so at least they can print enough money to try to get out of the economic doldrums. But then the drachma has to be worth enough to make it worth paying the euro debt, which is denominated in euros, so that's not easy. And I really think that, you know, the German bankers and the private bankers, they really have to take a bit of a haircut. I think that that's the only way. Or they have to extend the payout, or they have to give Greece a payment holiday of 2 or 3 years in order to enable them to build their economy enough to start paying the debt, and maybe an interest-free interim where they don't have to make payments. They can put payments into the economy, grow the economy, and then start paying the debt again. Somebody, there has to be sacrifice all around, is the end of the story.
It makes complete sense to me. All right, thank you for answering my question.
All right, thank you so much, Wendell, for calling. I appreciate the opportunity to pontificate, as always. All right, I'm going to do an early ID. Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm Mike Koenig. My compatriot is Egberto Willis. So in the event that Jenny runs over the next quarter hour, I don't have to cut her off. Jenny, thank you so much for being patient. You're on the air. I also appreciate Dana, by the way. Dana, I absolutely guarantee you will get on the air. So, Jenny, how you doing tonight?
Jenny?
I'm sorry, what's the name? What's your name, sir?
Or Jerry.
Jerry!
Jenny.
Are my eyes just bad? Did you type Jenny or Jerry? I guess it's Jerry. Okay, I need a new prescription. Jerry, how you doing tonight?
I'm all right. Actually, your point about Cyprus was extremely apposite. And that was a good, and I'd forgotten about that, but that is an incredibly good point.
Yeah.
That was a really poorly handled deal.
Oh, God.
And everything that was extremely poorly handled. I think that Greece would be totally within their right as a sovereign state to totally repudiate that debt.
Well, no. I mean, they can, but, you know, it's kind of like defaulting on your mortgage. The consequences end up potentially being pretty dire.
Well, you know what? You know, you say that, but Russia turned around and did that, and then, like, you know, a couple of weeks later, people were offering them money again. Russia did that back in, the 90s or something like that, early 2000s. Russia turned around and did that, and
Russia
had very little, deleterious effect on their ability to borrow, in fact.
Russia repudiated some of its debt. It basically
defaulted. Oh, yeah, they didn't make the payment.
Egberto, do you recall that?
I don't specifically, but I don't doubt what the young man is saying.
I am surprised. I don't doubt it because I know Jerry is pretty well informed, but I don't recall it at all.
Venezuela turned around and did the same thing. Now, of course, they do have problems, but
yes.
Russia, you know, did that, and any country can turn around and do that. And that brings up another point, too, about sovereign states, a la Barry. A sovereign state basically can tax any way it wants to. We have to operate under the Constitution and everything, but we can tax whoever we want to at whatever rate we want to.
Well, if Greece...
This is a democracy, or at least a republic, and you can actually turn around and do that. There are, of course, certain constitutional constraints, but that's it.
Well, Greece, I suppose, could do the equivalent of what a United States state could do, but typically has not. I mean, Greece could simply declare bankruptcy, essentially like the city of Detroit's so-called emergency manager declared bankruptcy. But then, of course, they have trouble getting any loans. It doesn't necessarily improve their situation. Even bankruptcy does not repudiate debt. What it basically is a claim to reduce the debt to the creditors. But the creditors have to agree. So it becomes a long, drawn-out
figure. Can always repudiate its debt. Now, it's not always a simple or easy matter, and it's certainly not the right thing to do in the vast majority of cases, but they can always do it. That's always an option.
But I think it's made more complicated when they don't have a sovereign currency.
But they could go out and start printing up drachma again.
They could, but on the world market, they'd be worth nothing.
No, that's not true. That's not true. It wouldn't be worth much.
Well, that's...
But it wouldn't be. It would be worth more than nothing, though. There would be some kind of convertibility there. There would be something where I could exchange so many dollars for so many drachma.
It might end up being
a dollar for so many drachma and everything, and everybody would be good with that.
It might end up being like 100 drachma to the euro or something. That's the equivalent of being worthless.
Right.
So anything
right.
they could,
would,
anything
that
they could not,
hold on,
any, hold
course,
on,
at that
anything,
kind of convertibility, of course, you can pay your debts a lot more easily.
Hold on, Jerry. Anything basically that they could not produce domestically, they would have to buy with this essentially worthless currency, which would mean that a lot of things they rely on to live would be unaffordable.
It wouldn't be worthless.
It
wouldn't be worthless. It would not be a real valuable currency, but it wouldn't be worthless.
They would
still be able to get... and also, you got to think, too, we have a political interest in this. Everybody in the West has a political interest in Greece hanging on. You know, we're not, you know, just writing them off for political reasons. You know, we have political reasons not to write them off. You know, we could recapitalize their banks or whatever, or give them some kind of emergency loan or whatever and everything. And these things have actually been discussed. Greece cannot repay. The ECB even admitted at one point, Greece is not going to be able to repay a huge percentage of that debt.
It, would, It would probably take generations.
Right. It would take like 100 years, yeah. And you know, basically, it would, you know, basically, and in the meantime, of course, Greece's growth rate, like you said, there's no way Greece can grow under those circumstances.
But here's the thing. After the Napoleonic Wars, I have read, the British government literally took 100 years to pay the debts it incurred during the Napoleonic Wars in the early part of the 19th century.
And, that's true. There's and, actually, and for a, hold you know, on, it hold actually on, goes on. Back and further
for
than that. I can tell
on.
You.
Jerry. And for 100 years, apparently, they would take 1% or 2% of their budget every year to pay down this debt. So it took four generations of Brits were paying for this debt for the Napoleonic Wars. But eventually they paid it off. But the question is, how fair is that to four generations?
I think it was incredibly fair. Let me just point out to you, you think that's bad? Do you really think that's bad?
I don't know that it's bad. I put it out
there. Let me give you an example exactly from the country you just cited, namely Great Britain. Great Britain still pays today. Today, they still pay on some investments, on some debentures or bonds that they put out to build the Spanish Armada. To build the fleet to fight the Spanish Armada. Honest to God, they're still paying on those. They're still paying on those and everything. You know, there's a reason why Marx said all that solid melts into air.
I wish I could verify that, but that's
no,
a really,
you can't
really
verify that.
Claim.
I can absolutely guarantee it.
I will probably remember to look that up because
yeah,
that's
you
really
do that
interesting.
And everything. They're still paying. And you know what? If you own one of those, if you own one of those financial instruments, you're a somebody in Great Britain.
Well, hell,
I'm practically guaranteed you're a somebody. You're either a big time businessman or you're a multi billionaire or whatever over there, or you're in royalty or something like that.
Huh. All right, Jerry, I'm going to let you go. I got a couple of other folks. You have anything you want to wrap up before you go?
Yeah. Ayn Rand. I saw Ayn Rand one time on the Tomorrow Show with Tom Snyder.
Okay.
And this was when she was getting pretty old. She was getting up there. She blamed all the West problems on Immanuel Kant, one of the great thinkers of Western civilization. And she sat there and said that basically it was because, in essence, Kant got people to start seeing things from another person's point of view. In other words, they actually had a little empathy or something like that. It basically boiled down to that.
Yep.
And everything. She was nuttier than a 10-pound fruitcake then.
Yep.
And everything. And and you know, when somebody writes a book called with the title "The Virtue of Selfishness," you know, Barry, you need to stand up. You know, are you a real conservative Republican? Are you a Christian? Are you an Ayn Rand fan?
She was a sociopath writing admirably about other sociopaths.
Right. Bingo.
Okay.
And sexual deviance too, by the way.
You're not going to go there, but I'll take
it. Nah, that's fine. Thanks.
Okay. Take
Bye-bye.
Care, Jerry. Thanks so much for calling. I appreciate it. Listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Next up is Dana. Dana, I appreciate your long wait. How are you doing tonight?
Real good. Just a couple of quick comments.
Okay.
Succinct answer to the person's question from earlier. How do you make the U.S. great again, the economy.
Mm-hmm.
Very simple. You raise federal income taxes on U.S. corporations. Straightforward. And along with multinational corporations.
There probably needs to be, what do they call it, a minimum, some kind of a minimum tax on incomes?
Yeah, you can look at the back of your IRS when you do your 1040 every year.
Yeah, I forget what they call it.
It's like the percentage that corporations pay versus what individuals pay.
Mm.
Corporations pay around 6%. We now pay around 21%. So it shifted. It used to be the other way around back in the 1940s and 50s, after right after World War II. Anyway, that's a whole other subject.
Yes,
people can read on Bernie Sanders about that.
Okay.
But at any rate, and Barry, he's a charlatan. He needs to get an education, and that's all I have to say about him.
You know, the attitude I take about any conservative, or for that matter, anyone who doesn't agree with me, at least for the purposes of this show, I take the position they're out there in the world, they're people we have to live with, we might as well at least try to understand how they're thinking and why.
Well, I'm done. I mean, I don't even try to understand him anymore because his, you know, sitting there giving you a grade on your liberalism, what a total fool. I mean, he's ignorant.
He's entitled
so,
to his opinion.
That's all I have to say.
Everyone is entitled to their own opinion, not their own facts.
Anyway, he gave you bad scores. Anyway,
I think so too.
Bye.
All right, thanks, Dana. Okay, Egberto, do we have someone waiting to go on the air? Maybe, maybe not. Egberto? Okay, well, while we're getting that sorted out, I'm kind of hold on, Cheryl.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm confused.
I'm sorry, I'll try to deal with that, or join
you. Thank you. Okay, I'll take either.
Okay.
I don't enjoy money, I don't pay attention to it, and I'm incredibly ignorant on all these topics. That being said, I've listened to your show tonight for the first time and thoroughly loved it and found it very educational, but I just have this really ignorant question.
No such thing as a stupid question the first one or two times
you ask. I think this one probably is. I don't understand why it's even an issue whether or not Greece will pay back their debt and, oh, how horrible they are for not doing so. Nobody's asking us to pay our debt back. What's the difference?
Okay, I'm not sure. Nobody...
America has a huge debt.
Oh, no. No one is asking Greece to pay back their debt all at once. What they want is for Greece to make their principal and interest payments, just like every month on a mortgage you make your principal and interest
payments. But they're in the middle of a depression.
I'm sorry?
But they're in the middle of a depression, you said.
Well, you know, during the depression, that was not an excuse to not pay your principal and interest to
the
bank.
Okay. Good to know.
Now, I just got cut off on Dana. Okay, Dana, I'm sorry you're cut off, but I will continue trying to answer your question. If you call back, we'll try to get you back on. The problem with Greece, you know, we're talking about predatory lenders. I think the Greek argument is that they are the victims of predatory lenders. Previous governments borrowed money that the bankers should have known could not be. Dana, you're back?
Cheryl, yes.
Cheryl.
Yes.
Sorry, I'm just reading the names off. Cheryl.
Not a problem, yeah.
So the Greek position is previous governments were overzealous in their borrowing and the bankers were predatory in terms of their lending. Bankers are supposed to give you the reality check. You
of
can't
course.
Afford to pay this
yeah.
back.
Of course.
So the Greek position is we shouldn't have been lent all this money. We should have been told when we had our debt much, much smaller that we had to do something. So on the one hand, yes, the governments are responsible for the money they borrowed. On the other hand, though, it's like a predatory lender who says, well, you only make $40,000 a year. We're going to tell the bank that I'm working for as an independent contractor that you make $60,000 a year, and that way you're guaranteed to get the mortgage. Now, the rule of thumb is that your mortgage, and I think this is applicable somewhat, your mortgage or your rent should not exceed more than about 25% of your income. Now, sometimes
sure.
they look at gross, sometimes they look at net, but basically 25%. If you're at 35 to 50%, you are in a potential danger zone in terms of your ability to not only pay the rent or the loan, but in terms of being able to support yourself properly and save a little money. So I imagine it's kind of the same thing with a nation. Now, the United States is not at the danger point in terms of debt. Our national debt, it's a humongous, unimaginable number of something like $17 trillion. But
okay.
the gross domestic product of the United States, essentially our income potential,
sure.
is about, it's almost $200 trillion.
Okay.
So if you were to use the 25% rule, we're flirting with the limit, but we're not there. And
okay.
the United States is growing, and if we tax appropriately, we should not have any problem whatsoever growing out of our debt.
May I ask a follow-up then?
Absolutely.
In 85, I lived in Greece, and I was shocked at how many people came up to me and begged me to take their life savings and bring it back and put it in a bank account, just as a total stranger.
Were they on euros at the time?
No.
Drachmas.
They were not.
They were on drachmas. Okay.
Yes. And... So I just thought Greece had always, have they ever been not terribly in debt and financially so unstable?
I can't speak for the economic history of Greece. Certainly, Greece you know, has had its problems. I think until the end of World War One, Greece was still part of the Ottoman Empire.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then they were devastated during World War Two, and they were impoverished, and tourism became essentially their prime source of income. And really, you can't live on that. That's always a risky way to live.
Sure.
So I guess they've always been, at least in the 20th century and the 21st century, they've always been sort of poor as a nation, sort of marginally able to support themselves as a nation. Inadequate diversification of their economy so that when there was a dip, it was a major dip. They couldn't say, well, we're doing okay with this. We're doing lousy on aggregate averages.
So they're also
very bad at collecting taxes.
Okay. So in terms of the predatory, quote-unquote, lending, which I concur based on what you're saying, what would have happened had the banks been responsible and said, no, I'm sorry, we won't loan you more money? Do you think Greece just would have gotten better at collecting taxes?
Hard to say. They might have gotten better at collecting taxes, but let's say even theoretically that the creditors would have insisted on something like an austerity program. It would have been a less draconian austerity program because the debt would have been less.
Sure. Okay.
So, I mean, that's kind of how I see it.
That answers my question very well. Thank you.
You're very
welcome. I appreciate it.
Thank you so
much.
Thanks for
the show.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Take care. All right. Gary, you've got 1 minute.
Okay, I'll try to make it concise. I hope you and the listeners might find this interesting.
Okay.
On KPFT several years ago, on Democracy Now!, Amy Goodman did several interviews with a gentleman named John Perkins, who talked about his role internationally as what he called an economic hitman, an EHM, economic hitman, where he said he and others who were trained like him would go to countries on behalf of the United States, in a kind of a subversive way, tell different world leaders that they better get in line and step with the U.S. program, and especially new leaders that were newly elected in third world countries, et cetera. He said they would set up loans through the International Monetary Fund or maybe the World Bank. The loans were designed intentionally to fail. I can't go into all those details, but look up John Perkins and Democracy Now!, you'll see some good stuff. And they were designed to fail, and the whole idea was when they couldn't pay back their debt, then they start putting the crunch on these countries with the austerity programs, and if they decided to buck the system, they would literally go in with the CIA, which John Perkins called the jackals of the U.S. military, to enforce this system. I'm just giving you the very brief version because we only have a minute.
Actually, now you have no time at all.
Okay.
I appreciate your calling, Gary. I can't respond to any of that, but we'll kind of leave it out there as information.
Thank you.
Take care. Thank you to everybody who has called. It's been an interesting show. I can't understand why nobody wanted to talk about how much air travel sucks. But we'll save that for another show. Maybe we'll talk about that Thursday at 3 p.m. when I'm sitting in for Greg Berto, Politics Done Right, except we'll do air travel done
and
right.
And you're going to do a great job for me, right?
I'm hoping. We'll have to see how you grade me. I hope I do better than the C-minus Barry gave. All right, thank you all so much for listening. And remember, if your vote didn't matter, they wouldn't try so hard to suppress it. I'll talk to you next week. Take care.
Pacifica Airways. This is your National Election Supervisor, Eljoy Williams, with some important information about the 2015 local station board election process. Your participation as a candidate, a voter, or by helping with outreach efforts is crucial to the success of your station. A lot of you have questions about this process, and here with a few questions is frequent listener Kim. Thanks for your help, Kim.
No problem, Joy. So what can you tell us about this election?
Sure. This is an election for the local station board. This station is part of Pacifica Radio, America's oldest independent media network and the only radio network with a democratically elected board. The local station board has a lot of power. The board members oversee programming, approve the station's budget, and create policy to ensure that programs represent the needs of listeners and the communities served by the station.
Wow, that is a lot of responsibility. As a listener, can I be involved in this process? How?
Sure, you can. You can participate in the process in a number of ways. First, by being a member of your local station, by running as a candidate, or helping to spread the word about the election.
Well, I listen to Pacifica every day. Does that make me a member?
Being a regular listener is great.
But to really support the station and participate in the election process, you must become a member by making a minimum annual donation of $25 or perform 3 hours of volunteer work at the station before midnight, Tuesday, July 14th.
So my next question is, let's say I want to do more than vote.